Welcome to The Download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, you know, as we get closer to the end of the month of July, the budget stalemate in Springfield sees no end in sight. It's mainly because a new governor, Governor Rauner, said he's open to raising taxes and finding new revenue scenarios if the General Assembly makes pro-business reforms. Most of these reforms center around collective bargaining and unions. It's no secret that Governor Rauner has made Illinois unions a target, following suit with our regional mayors, including Governor Scott Walker from Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, we've seen big changes the way unions can operate, and so it begs the question, are we going to see something like that here in the state of Illinois? My guest tonight at the big table, that's what I call this segment, the 8 o'clock hour, Tom, this is the big table we stretch out, is the president of SEIU's Illinois State Council. That's essentially the Service Employees Union, which represents janitors, some employees working in the public sector, healthcare workers. Tom Balanoff. Tom, good to see you.
Nice to be here.
So let's, when I read right there just about, some of the changes that have happened in the region, you know, with when it pertains to unions, you talk about, obviously it comes to mind, the presidential candidate, Scott Walker, what happened in the state of Wisconsin the last 5-10 years. Everyone always talks about Wisconsin being such a union state, but in terms of union states, Illinois is actually a bigger union state with a lot more history. Talk about that.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, Illinois is there's an awful lot of labor history, not only for this country, but for the world. You know, the 8-hour a day movement started right here in Chicago. Workers all over the world celebrate May 1st as Labor Day, honoring that struggle. And so there's been a lot of history here. We know about Pullman. We know about the Pullman Porter strike, and a lot of labor history here in Chicago and Illinois. And quite frankly, the labor movement, I think, has been a crucial part of the history of Illinois in terms of creating good jobs where people, if they work hard, they can get ahead, and having a fairer economy.
Do you see, is it a fair assessment when I say, what happened in Wisconsin was sort of the way that the current administration there wanted to change the way that unions operate could happen here in the state of Illinois? I mean, politically, it seems to be going in that direction.
Well, there's no doubt that Governor Rauner would like it to go in that direction. And, and you opened up by what Governor Rauner says is that he will help increase taxes, get the budget right if he can get pro-business policies put in place. He's not interested in pro-business policies. He's interested in anti-union policies, and there's a difference. If you look at what he's proposing to eviscerate collective bargaining in the public sector, not let workers bargain over any wages, benefits. He tried to move right-to-work zones here in the private sector. He's eviscerating bargaining in the public sector, and he really is holding the state hostage for some anti-union policies that will do nothing to turn around the state and will just put more and more working people further down on the economic
ladder. Now, there's
no
doubt on this. I would agree with you in the sense that, he's saying that, there may be a difference between sort of anti-union and pro-business, but his point being that a lot of the sort of the way that the unions have sort of worked with Democratic legislators to make policies that are sort of that have stopped growth for businesses coming in or staying here in the state of Illinois. When you hear that kind of rhetoric, what's your response to that?
Well, he uses Wisconsin as an example to show that, if we just had Wisconsin. Well, under Governor Walker, things have not worked very well for Wisconsin. Actually, Wisconsin has lost 90,000 manufacturing jobs. Wisconsin has lost more middle-class jobs over the last 13 years than any other state in the union. And a big chunk of those are part of Governor Walker's policies, which did nothing to stimulate the economy. It just further pushed down workers' wages.
Tom, it's interesting because, anti-union rhetoric is not always just about sort of, the idea of business reform. It's political. Right. Because, Governor Rauner is a Republican and he sees unions as a strong sort of source for resources, for revenue, for campaign contributions for the Democratic Party. So is this, when we hear all this stuff about pro-business, is this really about sort of changing the business climate of the state, or is it sort of political payback?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. And the political payback, if he's successful, will have an adverse impact on working people in the state and may help some businesses. You know, he complains that we're politically active, which we are. We involve a lot of our members. He doesn't say much about the fact that he and a handful of millionaire billionaires finance all of his campaign. You know, we really bring a balance. And quite frankly, we don't bring that much of a balance. I mean, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, the labor movement was a stronger force, both politically and in terms of the economy.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. You've been around for a while now. I mean, do you still have the sort of, you know, influence that unions had, say, in the 70s? That was, you know, a very strong, even the 60s.
No. In the 60s and 70s and before that, labor had a significant impact on politics, but they had a significant impact on the economy. And right here in Chicago, we would see we had the steel industry, you had the meatpacking industry. This was heavy industry that involved national bargaining. And really about a third of the workforce was unionized. My father was a steelworker. I grew up in Gary. They would negotiate a contract for the Gary steelworkers and affected 500,000 steelworkers all over the country. And quite frankly, it raised wages for everybody. In Gary, your father, and when I was growing up, it was mainly fathers, because mothers, a lot of them were at home. Your father didn't have to work in the steel mill, could work at any one of the little shops, but they had to pay him the same amount of money as the steel mills. So it helped raise the economy. And we saw, you know, when I grew up, if you went to work and you worked hard, you could get ahead. Nowadays, there's...
When did that change, in your estimate?
It changed with Reaganomics. It changed with... It was a real revolution. It was a shift, a significant shift in the economic structure. Okay? Reagan came in very strongly deregulating the economy, sent a message right off the bat when he fired all the Patco workers. And he really sent a message to the private sector saying, under my administration, busting unions is all right. But what happened is under Reaganomics is they deregulated the economy, deregulated capital, and in a matter of a decade, our industrial base collapsed. U.S. Steel within a year after that became USX and started buying, and we actually saw a collapse. And we've seen since the early 80s, wages in this country have either stagnated or gone down for the vast majority of workers.
Tom Balanoff is the president of SEIU's Illinois State Council. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk more about, you know, I'm fascinated about the labor history in the state. Obviously you're talking about Gary, but that's still right. The area, Northwest Indiana, but the steel mills, the meatpacking industry, and we'll talk more about the union's impact on the state and where we live. When we come back, be sure to check out the new CB app or hit up Facebook and tell Chicago's Best TV where you like to eat. Watch Chicago's Best Sunday at 10 p.m. on WGN TV. Your pick may be Chicago's Best.
This is a union town, a union town, all down the line.
To download here on WGN, I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Tom Balanoff. Tom is the president of SEIU, the Illinois State Council. We're talking about how the state of Illinois is a union town, a little bit about labor history here. And talking about how the political climate is changing as we see a budget battle sort of continuing in Springfield, all around sort of the rhetoric of how unions are holding us back. And Tom, it used to not be that way. I mean, it seemed to me like, you know, growing up, and I think about growing up in the state of Illinois, that was never really sort of, a prevailing argument.
Right. No, it is. As a matter of fact, unions have played a key role in really building the middle class, and historically they have. And I actually think as we see the decline of the middle class, it's directly related to the decline of unionism. You know, from when I was a kid, almost a third of the private sector workforce was organized. Today, it's the private sector, probably 8%, maybe even lower. You know, there was a time, and people would say, get a good union job, because you knew if you got a good union job and if you worked hard, you could get ahead.
Right.
And that's really what we're all about, right? Upward mobility, work hard. You know, it's important. My parents, your parents, important to teach us a good work ethic.
Right.
And it was easy then. It was easy because you could see your parents, they went to work and they did get ahead. You know, my father was just a steel worker, put four kids through college, owned a house. You know, nowadays, parents work one, two, three jobs, work hard. They can't get ahead. It's hard for them to teach their children that if you work hard, you can get ahead.
You know, before the break, we talked about sort of when it changed, because I talked a little bit about the 60s and the 70s of it sort of being the strong middle class. But, you know, one of the points in labor history was how, you know, car manufacturers, I mean, that's, the auto industry has sort of been a place where it was really strong unions, and you saw the auto industry sort of hit a bump and decline steadily. And in that, a lot of the ways that unions represented people changed, but even by federal standards. Talk about that.
Right. Well, I think that a number of things happened. You know, our economy did globalize, and we have to take that in consideration, particularly in the car industry, automobile industry. You know, it declined. It didn't decline because workers' wages were too high or any of that. It declined, quite frankly, because American automakers didn't go smaller, didn't do a lot of the things that Japanese and German automakers did. So those things happened. We see that the industry has come back now with decent-paying jobs, where they're not only producing cars in the country, but they're contributing now to the communities in which they have their factories, and that's all positive. Things have changed in a lot of ways, and you know, the decline of unionization, I think that's
Tom, like I'm thinking about some, even close to home. You know, I think of my wife's family. She worked, her grandfather worked at Studebaker,
right,
which was a big company at the time, sort of, you know, a big union job, and out of nowhere, boom, it was gone. And as well as sort of, you know, any sort of plan for retirement, anything.
Well, Studebaker was a key plant that plays a big history in retirement security in this country. Because you're exactly right. The Studebaker plant guaranteed workers a pension, that they worked and they retire. They can live on their pension. Then they closed, the company went under, they closed the plant, and there was no pension money. And it was really out of the Studebaker experience that we passed the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, which is the federal law that
says you have to pay.
Absolutely,
it out.
Regulates all private pension funds. Our local has a what they call a Taft-Hartley pension fund, and we have to make contributions. And if we don't make contributions, right, we're in trouble. Right.
Well, I mean, there's that. You can see how that is playing out now. I mean, just in the way that, you know, it was from those early days of the way that sort of, you know, car companies like Studebaker changed, that saw that the places are on the hook.
Right.
And now here we are in a way that, you know, they can't afford it, or say they can't afford it. But back to the idea of sort of a good union paying job, you know, and there really was this idea that you would not, I mean, that would be a good wage, but it'd also be this sort of the ability to negotiate for retirement.
That's right.
And those, and the benefits and healthcare and things that came into that. How has that changed over the years? Because that seemed to still be a big part of what you do with the unions. But is that, are companies receptive to understanding that you're trying to get healthcare and retirement and things for employees that are coming up?
Some companies are. I think they're all receptive to the idea that's what we're trying to get. Many are very resistant, though. And in this economy, it's gotten harder and harder. I mean, we see more and more jobs that are being created are contingent jobs. They're not full-time jobs. Employers don't want
hourly stuff.
Hourly, that's right. You know, there's a lot of employers who, new jobs they're creating them less than 30 hours, so they don't come under.
Is that the idea, because they want to skirt the union?
Well, they want to skirt the Affordable Care Act.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Right.
And if you're under 30 hours, I mean, so there's all kinds of ways. Now, there's a lot of responsible employers, and there's a lot of employers who want to do the right thing. And there's a lot of employers who, for example, here in the city of Chicago, we represent 12,000 janitors downtown. Just about every building except this one is unionized. And, you know, they pay decent wages, they pay good health insurance, and they pay for a retirement security. Now, we make sure that they're not competing each other over labor costs, and let the employers compete over quality. You know, when you compete over labor costs, the value of labor always goes down.
How so?
Well, if we want to compete over labor costs, and we say, well, to clean this building, you got to pay $15 an hour and provide health insurance, and then you find a contractor that says, well, I'll come in and do it for $12,
right,
without health insurance, starts to bring the value.
Everything
down.
Comes down.
It starts to bring the value.
Well,
down.
You've been, SEIU's been very instrumental in the fight for 15. That's the national movement to get $15 an hour for minimum wage. In Chicago, you compromise a little bit with Mayor Emanuel coming up here. We're going to have a $13 minimum wage. At the time, you said that was okay. I mean, is $13 an hour a suitable thing for SEIU in Chicago?
I tell you, improvements, those kind of wage increases are very good. Okay, I personally wish it would have gone to 15, but it's 13 with a with a cost of living, so it'll get to 15. Now, the importance of 15, there's two reasons why 15 is important. One, it is an hourly wage that we're pretty much getting to the place that people don't have to live in poverty. But it's also about the place where we stop subsidizing corporations. Okay, Walmart pays $10 and then tells their employees, go and get Medicaid and go and get, and we the citizens, subsidize those corporations. So the $15 is a good place because it just about there where it starts to cut off corporate welfare.
So is that, and that's something that, I mean, could benefit everybody. The idea of a $15 minimum wage means that you're not putting such a burden on the system, welfare system in this country.
If everybody in this state got paid $15 right now, it would take a big burden off of services that the state has to provide. It would significantly stimulate our economy. It would raise the revenue base because, you know what? Yeah. Working people pay taxes.
I mean, the argument you hear about that is that it's, you know, that companies don't want it because it's just too much money to spend on a workforce, or that, you know, they can find cheaper labor elsewhere. They're going to leave the country, or they're going to, you know, leave the state when one state has. Right. I mean, what's your response?
Well,
to that?
There are some employers who probably do that. We know there's some employers, particularly the venture capitalists, who are only concerned about making money. They're not creating steel or auto or anything like that. They're making money. And that's what they'll do. They don't care. I mean, you know, when Governor Rauner talks about a turnaround, he wants to use his business experience. I think that's all we need to see, because he didn't turn anything around other than his own personal wealth. He comes in, buys companies, rips them apart, inflates their value, sells them, and then leaves everything a mess. That's not turnaround for who? That's not what's right for the state of Illinois. I mean, the Governor Rauner now is proposing austerity. Austerity doesn't work. Where has austerity worked? Do we want to be Greece? You know, the way to really stimulate the economy is put people to work, make sure they make enough money so they can go out and spend money. And you know what? It not only will help our economy, it'll not only help our public revenues, but it'll also start taking care of a lot of social problems that are going on in this country.
What's it going to take to get the country to $15? I mean, is there a staunch opposition to it? I mean, do you have a problem with like legislatures around the country in different states saying, no, we're not going to do that? Do you have to go state by state?
No, actually what we're seeing, and it really, we really have built a movement here, way beyond SEIU's control, which is good. And we are seeing a real movement throughout the country, in all geographies of the country, where states, municipalities, employers even, are talking about raising wages and actually raising wages. It has to happen. I mean, we have the largest income gap that we've had in over a century. The United States, the largest income gap. We're one of the greatest income gaps in the world. I mean, that's not right. We're a wealthy country. It's not that we don't have wealth. It's just that we don't reward work the way we used to. And we have to. That's what's going to keep our country great.
Tom, let's take a break. We'll take a break and then we'll hit the news with Rob. But when we come back, I'd love to talk about the political side of this, because, you know, even hearing you talk about Governor Rauner, you kind of get that, you know, your hand out. You look like Bill Clinton. You know, you have this sort of like, it is a political job. I mean,
yes.
Running especially the state council, I mean, it's the political wing. You have, let's talk about that. Let's talk about it. Your role in politics in the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago, which you just came off of an election where it didn't really go your way in terms of the candidate that you supported. But there was some inroads made by the unions for some of the aldermen who are now in city council. We'll talk more about that with Tom Balanoff. He's the president of SEIU, the Illinois State Council. And we'll talk more with Tom coming up after the break in the news. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight at the big table, Tom Balanoff. He's the president of SEIU, Illinois State Council. Talking about the future of unions here in the state of Illinois. A lot of political rhetoric surrounding the idea of a union in Illinois. I mean, it kind of went from sort of something that everybody aspired to be in to something that politicians have used to say that you know, is ruining our economy, right. ruining our society. You know, we're going to talk about politics here because SEIU and unions have been involved in politics here in Chicago for a long time. I mean, you know, I think of unions being a big part of Mayor Daley's. You had a good relationship with Mayor Daley for years. How's your relationship with Mayor Emanuel?
My relationship with Mayor Emanuel at times has been strained. I'd say right now where we're at is Mayor Emanuel has big challenges ahead of him.
And going to be asking challenges. For concessions. I mean,
yeah,
don't
well,
you think?
And,
I mean, he's going to.
You know, probably. I mean, I think he needs to sit down with the unions that have direct employees and bargain and approach them in good faith and see what they can work out. I mean, a lot of the unions did work out situations with Mayor Emanuel. You know, when he first came in, his first term, he didn't meet with labor at all. Right after he lost his election, he called all the labor leaders together, even people like me who were supporting his opponent, and basically talked.
I love how you said he lost the election. He had a runoff. He didn't lose.
Yeah,
he didn't lose the election,
that's
but
right.
That's fine.
That's right. There you like how I did that, huh?
But go ahead.
But anyways, he met with and he talked about the problems, right. And I think that was important. And we understand the problems. Now the question is how well we're going to be able to deal with the solutions. And there's not a whole lot of easy answers, right? I mean, mm-hmm. There's real problems that we're facing in the city, in the state, in the country, for that matter. But
I don't want to go over old politics, but I mean, you did endorse Chuy Garcia yes. for mayor. You endorsed a lot of progressive candidates that were up against right. allies of the mayor. What was the reasoning at the time? Was it because you were dissatisfied with what the mayor and his relationship with labor in Chicago?
Yeah, actually, in the February election, we didn't.
You were neutral.
We stayed neutral.
Right.
And then when Commissioner Garcia got into the runoff, we looked at both candidates, and we strongly felt that Chuy Garcia would better represent the interests of our members, and that we felt there was an opportunity he could get elected. And we worked hard for him, and as you know, he didn't get elected. Our state council, our priorities were much more focused at the city council, mm-hmm. At building the progressive caucus, at building aldermen who will stand up for the working people in their neighborhoods. We got involved in 20 races, and 17 we won. So quite frankly, on that level, we did very well.
Do you think you'll see a difference in the way that the city council approaches the job of government, of representing us? I mean, if you said 17 that you won, I mean, are we going to see rubber stamp councils coming up like we have in the past?
Or you well, think- I actually think over the last couple of elections, we started to see a difference. Okay, we had rubber stamps forever. It's been three city council elections now. The independent forces in the city council have grown. Actually, this last election, the best place to be was to be a alderman independent or a candidate independent from the mayor. I think it is starting to create a better check and balance. We need it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know that decisions were made. Mayor Daley made a decision on the parking meters that he pushed through. There should have been more of a check and balance. There should have been an independent city council that could really go into those things and start to figure out the problems with those deals. And I think we now have more of that, more give and take and less of a rubber stamp and more of a check
Let
and balance.
Let me ask you this, because we had John Cass in here yesterday and we talked a little bit last week about it on the download. Paul Vallis, we talked to Paul Vallis. But there is this sort of movement to sort of now go back in time to say, okay, we have this financial situation in the city of Chicago, which is borderline or is straight up crisis when it comes to pensions, when it comes to budgets. And we want to look back and you were part of sort of, you know, endorsing the mayor, Mayor Daley, and sort of his his budgets moving forward. I mean, where did it go wrong in your estimation from SEIU? I mean, did you guys do sort of a good job of managing the finances of the city and making sure you had fair contracts for all 10, 15 years ago?
Well, I think in terms of what SEIU represents, we did a good job. We represent in the public sector primarily janitors, maintenance workers, teachers' assistants. We're not at the high skill level, but very important essential services. And I think that our members went to work and worked hard. Part of the problem that's come about is that the pensions haven't been funded properly. Not the workers. The workers, you know, their portion was deducted from their pay. They've paid their portion, but the politicians didn't. And, you know, now we're faced with a real crisis. But it's not just a crisis that we're facing in this country for public employees, for city employees here in Chicago or the state of Illinois. We're facing a retirement crisis for millions of workers. You know, we don't have a sufficient retirement. Social Security was never a secure retirement program. It was an anti-poverty program. There's many professionals, people, I'm a baby boomer, people my age who are in different professions, who can't retire because they don't have enough guaranteed income. They had 401ks, they took a hit in 2008, then those 401ks never got big enough to guarantee the kind of income people need. So really what we're facing, it is a crisis for everybody. Unfortunately, some politicians...
They like to say it's a union.
Absolutely.
Union's got us here.
Governor Rauner particularly has said, oh, this is all about greedy public employees. And the question is, why should they have secure retirements? And actually, the real question should be, why shouldn't everybody have secure retirements?
And you'll hear that rhetoric a lot, and you'll get it from people. I mean, there's a couple of texts that came in here that said, well, you know, public unions are the ones that have gotten us in this situation because, you know, look at the retired teacher, the retired superintendent who's making $200,000, and each year they get 3% more, and I'm getting nothing, and these people are getting this, and that's what's we can't afford as a society. So why do they get that and I don't? So what do you say when balanced at the idea of the public sector versus the private sector and retirement?
I say we can't afford it, and it's ridiculous to say we can't. We are not we are a wealthy country. We're wealthier today than we were yesterday, and we'll be wealthier tomorrow. We have to be able to figure this out. And there is a way. There's a way that we can solve this problem right now. Elizabeth Warren, Senator Warren, has a piece of legislation that says if we take the cap off of how much income is taxed for Social Security, if we completely eliminate that, so people making over $120,000 will now continue to pay, that we can immediately double the benefit of Social Security. If we double the benefit of Social Security today, there's many workers who would retire now because they'd have enough...
Union or otherwise.
Union or otherwise, yeah, right. Absolutely. Social right. Security is a... Labor right. movement was crucial in moving Social Security under Roosevelt, but it was another one of those pieces of legislation that helped the whole country. And we have a crisis. And... you know, and I know it's wrong for politicians, I think, to vilify one part of the workforce. And, you know, this whole idea that, well, they have it and I don't, so they shouldn't have it, that's wrong. We should all be able to have a secure retirement in this country, and it's affordable.
And what's your relationship? I mean, it's interesting because, you know, Democrats, especially in the General Assembly, Speaker Madigan, sort of leadership in Springfield has come under attack. The idea that they're just sort of protecting their own, they're protecting public unions, they're protecting the concept of, you know, they're out to get theirs. And Governor Rauner's sort of rhetoric is, if we could get them out of the way, we would be a much more sort of state that's ready for 2015, that's ready for 21st century business. What do you say to that?
I think that's ridiculous. I mean, listen, Mike Madigan, Democrats, they support public employees, they do. There's quite a few Republicans who do too, okay? Public employees provide crucial services, all right? They're firefighters, they're policemen, they're teachers, they're
maintenance
workers.
And at a certain
workers.
Point, they took those jobs this is how I've always known it. They took those jobs to be sort of give back to their communities with the idea that they may not get paid sort of like stockbrokers or people.
That's right.
And they would be taken care of as they sort of, you know, went into retirement. That was the trade-off of we need teachers, not just all people that are working in the private sector on Wall Street.
No, that's exactly right. And those employees, I think, have served this state as well as many states well. And now for us to try to say, well, too bad. You're greedy. We're going to cut off your pensions. That's wrong. It's not right. It's in this state. It's unconstitutional.
Well, obviously, I mean, the Constitution, the Illinois Supreme Court said, no, you made a handshake deal on these pensions, or not even a handshake, a contract, and said, you know, you're going to have to pay. And you've seen politicians try to figure out how to do this. From your standpoint, from your perch at the union, at the SEIU, you've sort of, you know, the unions in Illinois have sort of, you know, come to the table and compromise in a way that you have put your support behind some of the bills, even some of the bills that were struck down by the Illinois Supreme Court. What do you see happening next? I mean, are we at the stage now where they're, you know, the state is just going to have to pay up on what is due and you know, expenses everywhere else are going to get cut? Or are you sort of working with the legislatures to say, here's what we can do to make things a little easier on the bottom line.
I think a number of public employee unions have tried to work with the governor and with different legislators to try to figure this out. But at the end of the day, the state is going to have to figure out how to pay this. And it really goes to a bigger issue. You know, we can look at the problem with the pensions, but it really reflects a much bigger problem. If I was governor right now, what I would do, first thing I'd do, I'd say, let's put the same tax structure that Wisconsin has. Wisconsin has a progressive tax. Bottom end, I think it's 4.3%. Top end, it's 6.7%. If we had that progressive income tax in place right now in Illinois, we wouldn't be in the problems we are.
So why don't we have it?
Because we have in our Constitution that says we have a flat tax of 3%. So that treats everybody the same. You know, those 3% of someone who's making minimum wage, boy, that's a lot of money. 3% of Bruce Rauner, he buys wine with that money, okay? So, you know, we need to figure that out. And we need to have a progressive income tax. And we need wages to start to rise. If wages rise, workers pay taxes. They'll pay higher taxes on what they earn. They'll have more money to stimulate the economy. There'll be more.
So you say it's in wage increase, not tax increase.
Well,
that's
I think it's a wage increase. And it's a progressive tax structure.
So you say the structure has to change, not
Absolutely.
Just necessarily.
And I think those who have benefited the most from this economic structure should pay more.
When you hear the rhetoric and you hear the newspapers and the politicians getting the newspapers saying Chicago and the state of Illinois needs to be ready for a property tax increase. From SEIU, I mean, are you readying
that? Yeah. And I think probably in the short term, that's what's going to have to happen. There probably are going to have to be property taxes increased. But you know what? That's not the solution in the long term. The long term is that we have to have wages start going up again, and we have to have a fairer, more progressive income tax. Those who make more, those who benefited the most from the system, should pay more.
Talking with Tom Balanoff. He's the president of SEIU, the Illinois State Council. When we come back, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the city of Chicago. When I have these interviews, especially in the 8 o'clock hour at the big table, you know, City of Chicago plays a big part in this. I mean, this is WGN. It's the city of Chicago. So I want to get your take on where we are as a city and what the city means to you and the labor movement. Stay with us. So download here on WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Tom Balanoff. He's the president SEIU. He's in the Illinois State. I guess it's the president of the SEIU Illinois State Council, right? Did I get that right?
You got it right.
All right, Tom. So, you know, as we wrap up our conversation, you know, I wanted to talk about Chicago. Some issues still on the table. I mean, it's interesting because I see a lot of people who are texting in and calling in, and they have, you know, sort of the tried and true kind of arguments against unions. I kind of want to bring up some of the points just because I feel like you can answer them and you can talk about. But one of them is an interesting point about with the way that the federal government has regulated safety in the workplace, OSHA, other things like that. And is there the same need for a union that there was in the 60s when people were getting hurt and nobody, or even way before that, I mean, even right. The Haymarket and riots and things like that, and Pullman, and is there a need for this, for the unions, or, you know, do you essentially become, and that's where it comes in and says you guys are just sort of like a glorified pack, a super pack for politics. Yeah. Talk a little bit about that sort of...
Well, let's talk about one part that you just raised, safety regulations, and there's no doubt that I think that workers did unionize over safety concerns. You know, Chicago used to be one of the centers of meatpacking before they created refrigerated rail cars, which changed the whole industry. And it was funny. You knew whose fathers worked in the steel mills, and you knew whose fathers worked in the meatpacking house by how many fingers the packing house workers had cut off. And there was definitely a need, you know. And we saw, you know, Upton Sinclair, the jungle, where it talked about that. And there's no doubt there was a need. And it was a great thing that OSHA was passed. I might add, under a Republican president, Richard Nixon, helped pass OSHA. It did set up regulations. It helped states set up regulations and helped set standards. Quite frankly, Unions help enforce those. Unions make sure that they work with employers to keep places safe. You know, injuries don't help anybody, clearly don't help the worker, puts a burden on employers. So,
what's your take on the continuing debate over workers' compensation in Springfield? I don't know what to make of that. You know, the idea that Governor Rauner has suggested that there needs to be reforms to it because he feels like, and I only get it from the newspapers and things about sort of the idea that far too often people can abuse that system.
See, I don't know if that's true or not. I think like a lot of things, Justin, you grab one anecdote here and you say, oh, look at that, and this is what it means for everybody. You know, listen, there's reason for workers' comp laws, and they play an important role. I think that the Republicans and I think the Democrats and some labor leaders have indicated they're open to having discussions to see if there can be some reform. But eliminating them, that doesn't solve a problem. All that does is going to put more and more workers who are partially or permanently disabled because of workplace accidents on the public dole, because that's what will happen if they're not getting compensation. They're going to be on Medicaid. They're going to be on all kinds of other systems.
Another traditional, I mean, this is pretty cliche kind of argument about union workers is, you know, that unions protect workers who aren't as good and need to be fired. I mean, you hear that all the time, like, oh, well, he's a union guy, so he can't, you know, he can't be fired, that kind of thing. I mean, talk about that sort of perception.
Well, I can tell you what, my union, I don't think any unions protect bad employees. We certainly don't. When we protect bad employees, the other employees have to pick up all the slack. I can tell you those who believe union employees never get fired, you should come and see the grievances we get. People do get fired, sometimes for justified reasons and sometimes not. And when they're fired for reasons that aren't justified, we fight as hard as we can to save their jobs. Sometimes when they're fired, we might fight and say that the punishment was a little more severe. In the end of the day, though, in my union, and I think in most unions, protecting bad employees doesn't help the union, doesn't help the employer, and does not help you with the other employees, because bad employees are bad employees for everybody.
All right, let's talk about the city of Chicago. It's a pretty simple question. Is Chicago still a union town?
Yes, I think Chicago is still a union town. It's not quite as much as a union town as it once was. But, you know, Chicago is still a place that has pretty high union density. Unions have an impact both on the economy here in Chicago as well as the politics in Chicago and the state. And quite frankly, it's a good thing we do. There needs to be a balance. There needs to be a balance both in terms of what goes on in the economy and a balance in terms of what goes on in the political arena. And quite frankly, unions are one of the few organized forces that do speak up for everyday working people and push policies that not only positively impact their members, but positively impact thousands of workers.
Tom, you know, you talked earlier in the interview about growing up in Gary. Your dad worked in steel mills. You talked a couple times about steel mills versus meatpacking and plants here in Chicago. Such history here. You're a University of Illinois grad. I mean, you get your degree there, your master's in labor. Why Chicago? Why do you live here? What is it about Chicago that keeps you here and not sort of saying, you know what, there's SEIU in Ohio, I'll go to Ohio?
Well, there is SEIU all over.
Right.
I could go all over. I live here in Chicago because I think it's one of the greatest cities in the world. The city of Chicago is a fantastic city. The people of Chicago are fantastic. It's, you know, Gary's part of the Chicago metropolitan area. I grew up with it. I'm a lifelong White Sox fan, so I can't go anywhere else. I got to stay right here in Chicago. It's just a wonderful city. Has a lot of challenges like a lot of cities, but if we all work together, if the politicians and labor and business can all sit down and we can all reach goals that we can agree on, we can make things better.
What is it about the city, though? I mean, it's a great city. There's no doubt about it. But what is it that made you? I mean, you've been here. You've worked in unions, and you're the president of SEIU local. So, I mean, what is it about Chicago that made you who you are?
Well, I think it's what Chicago is. And, you know, Chicago, Carl Sandburg said Chicago was the city of big shoulders, and it is. I mean, Chicago is a town that, you know, came out of the prairies here, and it's and built a really magnificent world-class city that I think a lot of the world is just starting to find out about Chicago. And when you look at its history, you realize that this city was built on the shoulders of working people, and their organizations, unions, did a lot to help shape the city.
Tom Balanoff is the president of SEIU's Illinois State Council. He's also, in Chicago in. What's next? I mean, I got to ask you this question as we end because, you know, we're in the middle of a budget stalemate. You know, a lot of this is around the idea of public workers, reforms, unions. What do you, I mean, you're optimistic about how it's going to play out in Springfield?
Well, there's big challenges in Springfield. There's big challenges here. I'm optimistic that we as unions and we as American people will come together and start to get back to the traditional values that we had in this country, the promise of America, that if you get up every day and you go to work and you work hard, you can put a roof over your head, you can put food on the table, you can get health care for your family, you can have a secure retirement, and most importantly, you can create opportunities for your children. We can get back to that if we all work at it.
Tom Belanoff, thanks for being my guest tonight at Big Table.
Thank you, Justin.